Thank you for listening to the Ablaze Church Sermon Podcast. Our purpose at Ablaze is to love God, love others, follow Jesus, and tell others. If you are looking for a church home in the Tulsa area, we'd love to have you join us for worship on Saturdays at 6:30 p.m. or Sundays at 10:30 a.m. For more information, please visit our website at ablazechurch.org.
As I understand it, Pastor Spomer shared Wednesday about the feeding of the 5,000, and verses 45 through 56 of chapter 6, I'm going to give a brief synopsis to bring us up and then get into 7. So Jesus and his disciples, they fed the 5,000. The people want to take Jesus by force and make him king. Jesus sends his disciples off in a boat, and he has the ability and the power to dismiss the people and to slip away from them and go pray. Well, during the night, where Jesus' vantage point is, he can see the disciples out on the Sea of Galilee rowing hard, but the wind is not letting them get anywhere. And this is sort of, if you will, an example of the adversity that they're going to face in their ministry going forward. But they should know, after seeing this miracle of feeding 5,000, Jesus is sufficient to carry them through anything. And so he goes and walks on the water, and as he's coming, they see him, and they think he's a ghost. Now, there is a superstition in the Jews that if you saw a ghost at night, that could only mean bad things were going to happen. And here they are in distress, and so we're doomed. But Jesus says, don't fear, it's me. And only in Matthew does he tell us that it's Peter that says, Lord, tell me to come to you and I will. And we know the rest of that story. But when Jesus steps back into the boat, all the waves and the wind cease. And were they terrified before thinking he was a ghost? They're even more so amazed and terrified now that he has this power. And so he says, you know, you're amazed, but Mark tells us their hearts are hardened. Wow, you'd think of all people, they should get it, but they don't. And they crossed over and they land at Gennesaret and they anchored here. And this is where the people are coming from all over. They've watched them. The Sea of Galilee isn't that big. And you can see a boat going across. And so they run to get there so Jesus can heal them, bless them, maybe get another potluck. And all this. And it says that they begged him to let them touch even the edge of his cloak. Do you suppose the story of the woman who touched his cloak and was healed, do you think that got around? Surely it did. And so we're here at chapter 7. And what we have beginning verse 1 is the Pharisees and some of the teachers of the law who had come from Jerusalem gathered around Jesus and saw some of his disciples eating food with hands that were unclean, that is, unwashed. Now, what do we have? We have these Pharisees from Jerusalem have seen and heard about Jesus, and they heard and they know about the crowds that are flocking to him, and what do they think? We're the religious leaders. Why are they not coming to us? They're jealous. They're envious. And they want to find something to accuse Jesus of, to get rid of him, because he is horning in on their territory. And now Mark wants everyone to understand what's going on, so he has a parenthesis here to explain not only to Jews, but to Gentiles who do not understand Jewish traditions and such, and says, the Pharisees and all the Jews do not eat unless they give their hands ceremonial washing, as Pastor described, holding to the tradition of the elders. When they come from the marketplace, they do not eat unless they wash. And they observe many other traditions, such as the washing of cups, pitchers, and kettles, and I might add, cushions and couches. And the word baptism or washing here is the same one for baptism, the application of water. Verse 5, so the Pharisees and the teachers of the law asked Jesus, why don't your disciples live according to the tradition of the elders instead of eating their food with unclean hands? I mean, Jesus, come on. You can't even teach them the basics. Come on, Jesus, you're doing it all wrong. But what were they really saying? They're saying our oral tradition is the standard. And not only that, we are the standard. Not you, Jesus. Not God. That's what they were really saying. We are the standard. You should be following us. Well, Jesus knows what he's saying, and he replies in verse 6. And he drops a name, like they dropped the name of the tradition of the elders. I mean, what could go higher than that? Well, he drops a name, Isaiah. Probably the most revered prophet of the Old Testament. Was right when he prophesied about you hypocrites. And he says, as he said to the devil, as it is written, these people honor me with their lips, but their hearts are far from me. They worship me in vain. Their teachings are but rules taught by men. And so what did they want to do? They wanted to replace God, his commandments, his authority, with their rules, regulations, their authority. They had rules and regulations, but no relationship. And so he goes on to say, you have let go of the commands of God and are holding on to the traditions of men. Now, these washings, where did they come up with this idea? Well, God commanded Moses in Leviticus, as it's recorded, that there were certain washings and things to do. But they were never an end. They were just to signify internal purification. Verse 9, and he said to them, you have a fine way of setting aside the commands of God in order to observe your own traditions. He's calling them out. And he lists another person, Moses, who they say they follow, and lists one of the commands that Moses received from God, the fourth commandment. And he puts it in a positive form and a negative form. For Moses said, honor your father and your mother. That's the positive. And anyone who curses his father or mother must be put to death. The negative form. But you say, all right, here's what God said in his word through Moses, and you say you follow that, but you just toss that aside, and you say that if a man says to his father or mother, whatever help you might otherwise have received from me is korban. And again, the parentheses, he wants the Gentiles to know that is a gift devoted to God. Now, a person that wanted to take some wealth or money and devote it to God would simply say, I swear by the gold of the temple and the gift on the altar that this is devoted to God. And they did this to get out of taking care of their parents. Lots of sons and daughters to parents was the Social Security system of that day. But here these men come up with this rule. Why? Because of their covetousness, their greed, to keep what was theirs. And so they would make this vow. And what's interesting, they didn't even hold anyone to it. You didn't have to really give it to God. You could use it some way else. And so it was only to feed their own greed. And he says, then you no longer let him do anything for his father or mother. Thus you nullify the word of God by your tradition that you have handed down. And you do many things like this. This is just one example of many. Verse 14, and again, Jesus called the crowd to him and said, listen to me, everyone, and understand this. He wants now to teach everyone with plain reason this truth. And he says, nothing outside a man can make him unclean by going into him. Rather, it's what comes out of a man that makes him unclean. Simple, plain teaching. No parable, nothing. This is straightforward. And you'll notice that's verse 15. What's the next verse we see? 17. What happened to 16? Well, in the Greek text, it was translated in the Greek, And it has a verse 16, which has a phrase that Jesus used many times, if anyone has ears, let him hear. But when translators looked at the original manuscripts in the original languages, there is no phrase as that. So therefore, it is left out. But this note is here to instruct us in that. Verse 17, after he had left the crowd and entered the house, his disciples asked him about this parable. Now, Matthew tells us in chapter 15 that it was specifically Peter that said, teach us about this parable. And Jesus' response is, are you some special kind of stupid? Are you so dull? He asked, don't you see that nothing that enters a man from the outside can make him unclean? For it doesn't go into his heart, but into his stomach, and then out his body. Parentheses again, in saying this, Jesus declares all food clean. And we see that later in Acts, where Peter learns, it isn't foods, everything's clean, which means all people are clean. There isn't, oh, Jews are clean, Gentiles are unclean, nothing like that. And so he went on, verse 20, what comes out of a man is what makes him unclean. For from within, out of men's hearts, come evil thoughts. It is our sinful heart that all these generate from. Now, he gives us a list of 12 items and divided into six or groups of six. The first one, sexual immorality, theft, murder, adultery, greed, and malice are all behaviors. Deceit, lewdness, envy, slander, arrogance or pride, or folly or foolishness are all attitudes. Now, evil thinking can lead to sins of commission. Not thinking about God's word, not living our lives guided by the Spirit and His word can lead not only to sins of commission, but sins of omission. In any way, in any shape or form, if we do not follow God and His teachings, we're going to sin. And they all come from within. It's a condition or issue of the heart. As he says, all these evils come from inside and make a man unclean. It is that sin that separates us and breaks fellowship with God. And this goes against what the world says. Ah, well, nobody's perfect. It's no big deal. People are basically good. And the theologian Flip Wilson said, the devil made me do it. Well, that's not true. We don't need the devil to make us do anything. We can do that on our own. All he can do is suggest. What causes sin? It's not being tempted. It's not having an evil thought. It's when you take that thought and you go, yeah, I kind of like that. I'm going to coddle this one. I'm going to raise this one. I'm going to feed it a little bit. And pretty soon it's, yeah, that's what I'm going to say or do. And that's, as Paul says, it gives birth to sin. So now, verse 24. Here we have the first time that Jesus goes to a Gentile area. Why? Well, the people want to make him king by force, and you've got all these pesky Pharisees, and I'm going to borrow that phrase from Pastor. That's what he calls them, pesky Pharisees. Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre, a Gentile area. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it. Yet, he could not keep his presence secret. It's like, really, Jesus? You're going to go with 12 guys following you and then the crowds following, clamoring after you, wanting healing and stuff? You're going to do it in secret? You know? Well, good luck with that. And now Mark introduces us to a person. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. She worshiped him. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. That phrase, she begged, means it was an ongoing thing. And Matthew tells us that she went around saying, Lord, Son of David, have mercy. And continually she did this, so much so that it annoyed the disciples. And they said, Jesus, send her away. But thank God, he's merciful. But here's the test for her. His response, and when I first heard this many years ago, I thought, that doesn't sound like Jesus. He said, first let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Wow. Well, that's not very loving. That's not very gracious. What is he saying, though? It's not an exclusive statement. All he's saying is, I've come first of the lost children, the lost sheep of Israel. But then, as maybe we've heard Chuck say, there's more. There's more grace, more mercy for everyone. And so what does she say? She agrees. Yes, Lord, that's true. But even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. And that word dogs in Greek means little dogs, little pets. They're part of the household. Who has pets that they don't care for those pets, that they don't feed those pets, that they don't receive what they need? And then he told her, for such a reply, that reply of faith, you may go. The demon has left your daughter. She went home in faith and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone. Hallelujah. And the next phrase, the next story we have, then as Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went through Sidon down to the Sea of Galilee and into the region of Decapolis. Well, where did he go? If you look at a map, here's Tyre. He went north. Sidon, another Gentile area. And then he comes back down and kind of goes around Galilee. Don't want to get too close to those crazies. And goes down to Decapolis, another Gentile area. And there, some people brought to him a man who was deaf and could hardly talk. And they begged him to place his hand on the man. Now, this man, we surmise that was born deaf. And we know that people who are born deaf, when we listen to them talk, if they learn to talk much at all, they don't sound right because they've never heard all the nuances and accents and things that would enable them to speak in the language of the area that people would understand. And so this guy, poor guy, could probably just make some squeaks and noises and people figured out what he may want or need. After Jesus took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus in humility. This is not the healing camp meeting. This is where he's going to minister this man. His total concern and care is for this man. It isn't to put on a show. And it says, basically, Jesus is the medicine. He put his fingers into the man's ears, and then he spit and touched the man's tongue. And he looked up to heaven. Why? To give thanks and praise to God the Father who makes this all possible. And with a deep sigh, his humanity, as he relates to our weaknesses, our infirmities, and said to him, Ephphatha, which is Aramaic, be opened. And this isn't an incantation or a spell or something we can use to invoke a cure. This is the Lord of glory speaking a word of power and command. And it says, Mark writes, at this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. He received everything he needed for complete healing. He could hear and understand everything perfectly, and he was given the knowledge and the experience and the ability to speak plainly. There was no Babel course. There was no rehab. It was immediate. He could speak and everyone could understand him. That's a miracle. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone like he had so many times before. But the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. Have you ever been overwhelmed with amazement? Can you think of a time that you were? Anyone? Yes. Dr. Spooner, Connie, thank you. Well, for me, it is thinking about and realizing that God saved me, a sinner. And it is those times when I've seen people that were healed apart from man's medicine and techniques, and they were made whole. Wow. Overwhelmed with amazement. And they said, he has done everything well. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. And this is a fulfillment of Isaiah 35, verses 5 and 6. What do we take away from all of this? Well, many things, perhaps. In that day, and in our day today, especially if you've been involved with social media in any way, shape, or form, you've seen when somebody says something about the Jesus they love, the God that they serve, and then the bomb throwers come out. You can't prove he exists. He's not real. He's a fairy in the sky, your imaginary friend. And all these things that they say, they have nothing good to say about it, just like the Pharisees had nothing good to say about Jesus. But for those people who know Jesus, who has touched their lives, they know who he is. And they know that he touched their ears and they could hear the gospel. And they know that he has loosed their tongue to sing his praise, to share the message of his gospel to all people everywhere. And don't blame those people that have nothing good to say about him. We once were just like them. Our hearts were dark and dead. And his miracle brought us to life. He gave us that ability to look and see the outside, not as someone who is unclean and dirty and not worthy, but as someone who needs that gospel to cleanse their hearts as he cleansed ours in baptism and lifted us up. And so all we can do is water and plant, and he will give the increase. That's what we're called to do, and that's what we can take away from this.